Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we are speaking with Jenna Ziegler about primary sclerosing. Okay, now I can't do it. Cholangitis. I got it. Cholangitis.
Yeah, you got it.
Primary sclerosing cholangitis. And we'll talk more about what that is later, but it sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, our guest Jenna. She's a writer, a storyteller, and a patient advocate. Jenna lived with three invisible illnesses: ulcerative colitis, primary sclerosing cholangitis, and enteropathic arthritis. And she's also joining us today from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Hi, Jenna, and thank you for coming on the show.
Hi, Jenna.
Hi, you guys. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here with you all.
Oh, we're the honor to guest. Yes, we're honored to have
you.
Jenna, obviously this was all new to us. We've never heard of it. What exactly is primary sclerosing cholangitis? Wait, cholangitis.
Yeah.
Cholangitis. I bet you learned how
you
to say it. You learned how to say it.
Yeah, so it's according to the Mayo Clinic and PSD Partners Seeking a Cure, which is a nonprofit. PSD is a rare, progressive, autoimmune, non-alcohol related liver disease. There's a lot going on with it. Mm-hmm. It stands for primary sclerosing cholangitis, mm-hmm. which essentially means that the bile ducts inside and outside your liver become inflamed and scarred.
Okay.
So kind of what this means is your bile ducts transport bile, which is a fluid that helps digest food from your liver to the intestines. But when your bile ducts become inflamed, they don't work properly. They become narrowed and scarred. And this actually traps bile inside the liver. Oh. Which is not supposed to happen.
Okay.
And this can lead to scarring, which is also known as fibrosis. And if that progresses, it can lead to cirrhosis, which is where parts of your liver just stop working. They stop being functional.
Right.
And this can lead to liver failure and liver transplant.
Okay. How common is this problem? I've never heard of it, but is it common?
So it's actually not. It's officially a rare disease.
Okay.
There are actually fewer than 30,000 people in the United States
with
PSD. Yeah. So I am one of the lucky ones.
You're very
ones
rare.
Recently.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. It's a rare disease. I believe that an estimated 1 in 10,000 people have the disease.
Okay.
And approximately 1 in 100,000 people are diagnosed worldwide each
okay.
year.
Okay.
So, Jenna, what symptoms did you have that led you out to, you know, seek out a diagnosis?
Yeah, so that's interesting because when my gastroenterologist first noticed so she caught it by I had abnormal liver numbers. Oh. At the time, which was November 2017, I had no symptoms. I was completely asymptomatic. My doctor actually noticed really elevated liver numbers, which is a red flag. And so she, luckily, this is her specialty. She's a gastroenterologist with a specialty in PSD. So immediately,
you were lucky.
Great choice.
Oh my gosh, I was so lucky that she is familiar with this and you know noticed those red flags.
Uh-huh.
So it came as a shock to me because I had no symptoms. It was very very scary when she told me this that it was a possibility that I had PSD.
Uh-huh.
It does affect each person differently. So I do want to list a few symptoms that other people may experience.
Okay.
I have not experienced many of these, but there are people that do have fever, chills, and night sweats, extreme abdominal pain and vomiting, Some people do experience cholangitis attacks, which is an infection of the bile ducts in the liver, and it typically requires hospitalization and some procedure.
Okay.
Another common symptom is something called pruritus, which is intense itching of the skin. Since that initial realization that I might have PSD, I have since gotten pain in my upper right part of my abdomen, right behind my ribs. I do experience that now, and I do experience chronic fatigue. So those two symptoms are really what I'm dealing with at this point in time.
Okay.
And Jenna, can you please tell us and our listeners, how is this, is this a progressive disease, or is it something that is...
Well, obviously, she didn't have any symptoms before. Now right. She does, so I guess it's a little progressive, but okay. How does it progress?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So it is, unfortunately, a progressive disease. There are four stages of PSD. Each stage, on average, and I say on average because PSD is so unique that it really affects everyone so incredibly differently. But on average, each of the four stages can last about 5 years.
Okay.
In the U.S., there are studies that suggest that life expectancy ranges from 9 to 18 years since diagnosis, if they don't undergo a liver transplantation. I don't want to scare people listening because it does sound really, really scary, but there is a bright side to this. I'm in some PSD groups on Facebook, and I've heard people's stories. Some people are living, 30 plus years with disease and they're fine.
Okay. So it does affect everybody differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone so differently. So it's really hard to, tell how it'll affect you.
Do you have to like go in for routine ultrasounds or something to test to see how it's going? Or is it just blood tests that they kind of check the prognosis as you're going along?
Yeah, so I think blood tests is probably the most common thing that people get because it's so simple, and you can do that really regularly. And so I do that. I do regular blood tests just to keep an eye on my liver numbers, see how they're doing. And then there are some non-invasive tests that you can do regularly. Maybe it's once a year, every 2 years. It's really what your medical team decides. But there is something called a FibroScan. Which it's kind of like an ultrasound, and it tells you the elasticity of your liver, because essentially when you get fibrosis, your liver becomes stiff. Mm-hmm. So the stiffer your liver, it can suggest that you are progressing in the disease.
Okay. Thank you.
I guess the next question would be, is there a primary cause or how does somebody get the PSD?
Yeah, so I wish that we had a solid answer for that. I really wish that I had, that there was an answer. Unfortunately, right now, the cause is unknown. Scientists and doctors do think that there are a few components that may cause it. And this includes an autoimmune component, a genetic component, environmental component, and a microbiome component.
Wow. We were just studying about microbiome, so we understand that. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy how the microbiome can really affect so many different parts of your body in so many different ways.
Yeah, for sure. And does, speaking of which, does a diet play a role in this then?
So I would say for some people it does, for some people maybe not so much. Since there is no one-size-fits-all diet for this disease. But with liver disease in general, not just PSD, but I think the main thing that individuals should be focusing on is ways to reduce stress on your liver. So, for example, some people might need to watch their sodium intake to avoid fluid buildup in their liver.
Mm-hmm.
Other people might need to pursue a low-fat diet because something common in PSD is fatty deposits in the liver. So okay. You don't want to continue adding fat to that. Since my PSC was fortunately caught in its early stages, I don't have a specific diet from my doctor at this time, but I do just need to be pursuing an overall healthy diet. So this includes lean meat, lots of fruits and vegetables, less processed food wherever possible, and limited alcohol intake.
Sure.
And I think that's a great diet to follow for everybody.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
Yes, absolutely.
And how exactly did your healthcare team, you were saying that...
A blood test.
But how did... Was it just that blood test, or how did they go about finding your diagnosis?
Yeah, so it started off with the blood test. That really got my doctor's mind racing about, okay, what kind of non-invasive test can we do to, find out why those liver numbers were high? Because, you know, sometimes you can have high liver numbers, and it's not because of PSD or any other disease. It could perhaps be a medication that you're on or something. So she started having me do some non-invasive tests to get to the bottom of it. So I did several MRCPs, which is a special kind of MRI. However, both of those came back with normal results. So we said, okay, let's go to the next test.
Okay.
So we did a specialized blood test called a FibroSpect. Again, everything came back normal. We kept digging, you know, there had to be a reason for the high liver numbers. So we did a liver ultrasound. And this one suggested that I had fatty deposits in the liver, which is a key sign of PSC. And then more recently, I did the FibroScan test, which did suggest possible stage one fibrosis.
Okay.
And then most recently, I did a liver biopsy. This was only a few months ago in February 2020. And it was an interesting experience, we'll say,
yes,
because I
yes.
was I was awake for the procedure.
Oh.
It was so interesting. So I remember a lot of the procedure. I remember I remember the needle going in. So that's essentially what they did with the liver biopsy is they stuck a large needle in there to take out a sample of the tissue and then examine the tissue under microscope. And my results were interesting. I think my case might be a little bit unique in this way. My results said that I had the scarring around the bile duct, which was anticipated, but I had no sign of inflammation. And this shocked my hepatologist and the medical team because when they see PSC patients under microscope, they have scarring and they have inflammation. So what my hepatologist thinks is that the medication that I'm on called vancomycin basically stops the inflammation because I'm sure I had it, you know, back in 2017 when the liver numbers were high. So their thought is that the medication stopped the inflammation from spreading, but it left the scars around the bile duct.
Okay. Well, that kind of makes sense then, right? Is that medicine?
Yeah.
Is that what the medicine is supposed to do? Is take down the inflammation?
Yes, it is.
It just did a really good job for you, huh?
It did. And I will say vancomycin, it's just like many medications, not just for this disease, but for a lot of diseases. They don't always work for everyone. But for me, I can quite say that it saved my life.
Right.
Stop that inflammation. And it's thought to stop the progression of the disease. It's kind of a... Vancomycin for PSD is kind of a newer thing that doctors are trying.
Okay.
But for me, it's working, and I'm so, so grateful.
That's great. That's wonderful. Yeah.
I'm so sorry. Could you repeat that, Ron?
No, I said that's good to hear.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yes, I'm super, super happy that it's working for me. And for my case, it is a lifelong medication. It is an antibiotic, so that's why it's maybe not prescribed as commonly as other medications, because I will be on it for the rest of my life. But if I, you know, if that prevents the need for a liver transplant, then hey, you know, I'm willing to do that.
All for it. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. If you do ever, go ahead, Ron. I'm sorry. I walked on you.
No, that's okay. It's hard trying to do this remotely, but that vancomycin, is that a newer medication or has that been around for a while? I mean, it's working great for you. Is that something that they're using on other patients with the same illness?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's technically not a new medication. It's most commonly used for C. diff infections, but the use of it for PSC is newer. Mm-hmm. It's still undergoing, you know, trials, and it's still kind of being investigated, and it's not a staple prescription for PSC, so it's not prescribed by a lot of gastroenterologists or hepatologists. I could talk forever about vancomycin for PSC because it's something that I'm so passionate about.
Of course.
But there are some reasons why it's not as common as other medications. One of which, it's not approved by the FDA specifically for PSC. But, you know, it's working in my case, and there are doctors out there that prescribe it because there are studies out there that have proven what it's done for me, for mm-hmm. others, is so, that it can really, you know, stop that inflammation.
So the fact that your doctor was a specialist in PSC probably opened that up for you as an option, whereas if you went to a different gastroenterologist, might not have even thought about it.
Absolutely. Yes. This is her passion. This is definitely something that she loves pursuing. And I really hope one day that vancomycin can be a staple medication for PSC.
Definitely. Avoid transplant. Our cousin had a liver transplant a couple of years ago, and that's actually why we started the podcast.
Oh my gosh.
Right. And we went through that with her. We found out that, number one, we live in the Chicago area, and you would think Chicago, lots of hospitals, good care, but she was on a transplant list here in Chicago for a year, and she the hospital gave her a month to live at the end of this year. They said, unless you find a transplant, unless something comes in the next month, you probably won't be here. So get your affairs in order, basically. And Jean and I, at the time, were in North Carolina at a health facility at Duke Medical Center, because Jean was recovering from an army injury that left her somewhat paralyzed for about 10 years. And once she started moving again, we went out there to help rehabilitate her. So while we were there, we got this call from my cousin. Sorry to get off the track, but I think this is important because it's concerning livers. And we got the call from my cousin, and she said, you know, I have bad news and this and this. And I don't take that as an answer. So I went to...
So we were renting a house there. So
okay,
that
Jean's
going to continue. Because we were there for an extended period of time. So we were renting a house. And it was a block of houses that are rented out and owned by traveling nurses. And some people moved in next door and they said, oh, are you also here for a liver transplant? And we said, no, we're here, you know, I'm recovering and such and such. Well, the people that were our neighbors were there for a liver transplant. They were there from Boston. And it turns out that if you need a specific organ, it's good to find out who does the most transplants per year, who does matched and other different types of transplants. And Duke happens to do both hot box and Xerox, but where they'll slice the liver in half so that you get two mirror images and transplant twice as many patients. And then they do hot box so that it doesn't have to stay on ice and that it can be viable for a longer period of time. They also will send out a team to evaluate organs rather than just reading whatever the description was or taking what the cause of death as a deterrent, because, for example, there may be a lot of overdose patients that are dismissed out of hand, where the liver or other organs might not be viable.
Yeah, they might not have had any liver damage, but yeah, it was their first time doing a drug, and it took them out.
And then there's
the liver was fine.
Right,
but
and then
people will see that it was an overdose, and they'll just, a lot of hospitals won't even look at it, whereas Duke will send a team out, and they will evaluate every organ. And they have so many transplant doctors there that they do more than any place else in the country, at least at the time.
And there's also the issue where as settlers have traversed, you know, the United States and settled out in certain areas, your blood type in particular might be more common in a different part of the country than where you currently reside.
There might be more A-positive or O-positive.
Yeah, if you're an O-negative patient and you need an O-negative organ, that can be very challenging, whereas you're like, if you're AB-positive, the world is your oyster. So if you also search out facilities where that particular blood type is very, very common, that can also facilitate possible transplants.
So we ended up getting Gina out there. The next, like within that week, we flew her out. And we got her, I talked to the transplant team at Duke before we flew her out, got the approval. And they said, yeah, you know, send us her paperwork. We sent the paperwork from her hospital to there. They said, yeah, we'll see her and evaluate her. So we got her out there within the week. They evaluated her and they said, absolutely. And within 1 month, they transplanted her.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So if you...
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
When and if the time comes... know that you can be registered in more than one region, more than one area, as long as you can get there within 4 hours. And there are so many small private
airplanes
that if you contact, you know, the local airport and say, hey, you know, I might need a liver or, you know, transplanted, and I'll need to get there right away.
They can set you up with a private pilot.
They can make you accommodation. And, right. There are so many people that will make accommodations for you and help you out.
And we live on an airport.
We live at a private airport,
right.
So all of our neighbors have planes.
We could have gotten her a ride out there in an emergency.
But said stay.
But they just told her, you know what, you're in too bad a shape. You need to stay until we transplant you. So she did.
Right.
So she did. But we just highly recommend to everybody that is... in a bad situation that needs an organ, register in as many areas as you can, because it increases your chances, and you need those chances.
And as you know, as a health advocate, the more you know, the more you can take control of your own health, which is, you know, a goal for everybody, I think.
Right.
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing that up. That's a really great story. And oh my gosh, yes. PSC, since it can require a liver transplant, and I mean there is a liver shortage, there is that possibility of people being on the list and then, you know, passing away before they're able to find a donor.
Right.
So I appreciate you bringing that up, because I think it's so important. If people are able to register as an organ donor, it can save lives.
Absolutely.
It can save.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah,
it's so important.
On. Yeah.
Yes.
And then one other link, and then I'll get back to the script. matchingdonors.com is also another site that people can go to if they are in need of a liver transplant.
Or any organ.
No, not
kidney.
Any. Kidney or liver.
Kidney or liver.
Mostly kidney.
Mostly kidney. Those organs that can be transplanted.
From live people.
Right. So you can so you can find out that there's someone in your neighborhood, say, or someone across the country that needs an organ. And if you're that blood type, your local hospital can take a sample, see if you're a match, and then you can go to wherever they are.
Because a liver, you can just take a part of a live liver if somebody's willing. If somebody's willing to donate.
Right.
That's wonderful. What was the name of that website again?
Matchingdonors.com.
Okay. Wonderful. I have not heard of that one. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
Matching donors.
Yeah.
I love it.
And then, Jenna, are there any other, you had mentioned that there are other medications that individuals might be prescribed for treating primary sclerosing? Nope, I can't do it. What is it?
Cholangitis.
Cholangitis. Thank you.
Yes.
I'm so sorry. Every time I look at it, my mind goes blank.
No, don't be sorry. Honestly, when I first heard of this disease, it took me a long time to figure out how to say it. So don't apologize. It's a long one.
It is, yeah.
So the other, I would say probably more common medication that's prescribed for PSC is called, okay, and I'm probably not going to say this word right, ursodeoxycholic acid. It's better known as ursodiol or urso.
Okay.
I have a lot of friends with PSC who are on this one. It's much more common than vancomycin. It's supposed to increase the flow of the bile, which can be really beneficial for PSC if it tends to get, you know, trapped.
Mm-hmm.
So it can kind of like help the sludge get out of your liver. Again, just like Vanco, Urso does not work for everyone, but it works for some people, and that's wonderful.
That's I have a quick question. It's way off. Have they ever tried using shunts in the bile duct? I don't know if that's even a possibility, but I was just curious.
To keep them open?
To keep them open, yeah.
Yes. There is a procedure called an ERCP.
Okay.
And I know that they do put like a stent in your bile ducts when people get the cholangitis attacks.
Okay.
So I do know that that's used for that. I don't think that there's any long-term type of procedure like that. I could be wrong. I'm not as familiar with that, but that would be amazing if they had something like that, mm-hmm. that, you know, could help you in the long term, keep that bile flow going. That would be amazing.
For sure. And then I forgot to ask you earlier, are there any medical conditions that go along with this problem? In other words, like if you've got the PSC, are you more likely to have other medical conditions because of it?
Yes. So there is a really interesting association with PSC and inflammatory bowel disease, or IBD.
Mm-hmm.
So many people actually with PSC also have IBD, more commonly ulcerative colitis than Crohn's disease, which are both under the IBD umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
I personally do have ulcerative colitis. This blows my mind. It's super fascinating. About 80% of people with PSC also have IBD,
mm-hmm.
but only about 5% of people with IBD develop PSC.
Oh, okay.
So I'm in that 5%.
Right. So you don't know which comes first, the chicken or the egg, but...
Right.
But they do seem to go along. At least people with PSC seem to have IBD quite often.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
So, Jenna, earlier you mentioned that since you were talking about some symptoms, and you mentioned that you were starting to feel some pain recently, mm-hmm. in your abdomen, and some fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
Having the PSC, how has that affected you personally, like in your work life or social life?
Yeah. So thankfully, the pain that I get, it's not chronic pain. So it comes and goes. So luckily, the pain for me at this point is manageable. What affects me much more in my day-to-day life is the chronic fatigue. I work part-time right now, because by, you know, 3-4 p.m., I'm exhausted. I am ready for bed, you know, at that time each day. I also work from home. Even before the whole coronavirus started, I thankfully can work from home, which allows me to take breaks when I need to, take care of, you know, medical calls or go to appointments when I need to. The other way that chronic fatigue has really impacted me is I need to limit my social outings, or at the very least, I need to plan them out ahead of time to ensure that I get the right amount of sleep and rest beforehand. So for me, sleep is super important in managing my health, both mental health and my physical health. I do need around 9 to 10 hours of sleep each night for my body and my brain to function, you know, as it should.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That really does affect me, but I'm so lucky to have coworkers and friends and family who understand this and understand when I need to, you know, leave a social outing early or, you know, go to bed at 8, 9 PM. It's very helpful when I can do that.
That's wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, again, you said this is a pretty rare disease. Do you have any advice for someone who might recently be diagnosed with PSC?
I do. And I have, I would say, kind of two main pieces of advice for those who are newly diagnosed. The first one, and this is what my gastroenterologist told me, when she first told me that I might have PSC, is don't Google it. Because the first things that come up in Google about PSC can just be very disheartening. I would recommend if you want to learn about PSC, if you're newly diagnosed, you want to learn more about it, I would recommend going to the PSC Partners Seeking a Cure website. It's the nonprofit foundation I had mentioned at the beginning, and they provide education about PSC in such a helpful and community-driven way. So I think that would be a great resource for those who are newly diagnosed. And then my second piece of advice is to find community immediately. Because like you said, Ron, it is a rare disease, and therefore it's lonely, you know, hard to find others who have this disease. But luckily there are support groups, and there are conferences for patients. The nonprofit PSC Partners actually does a yearly conference where you can meet others with PSC in person. I've gone and it was wonderful. And there are also communities on Instagram and Facebook. I would recommend diving into the PSC online community. It's such a welcoming and inspiring community, and it's helped me get through a lot of hard times.
That's great.
That's great information to hear. But do not Google it, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't listen to my doctor, and I did Google it. And then I wished that I didn't, because maybe some of the things that come up are older research. So it's just disheartening. So it already is, a frightening disease. So I would just recommend going to, you know, a credible resource. It helped me emotionally a lot, just kind of getting my information from that website.
Sure.
So you mentioned Partners Seeking a Cure website.
Yes.
Right. We'll put a link We'll put a link on our website for that.
Wonderful. Yes. I can provide that.
All right.
Thank you.
And how can our listeners learn more about you and your journey?
Yeah. So you can find me on my blog. It's called The Comical Colon, and it's thecomicalcolon.com. I actually do have I recently published a 4-part series about my liver biopsy experience. If anyone wants to check that out, it goes into a lot of detail. And I'm also on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all with the handle The Comical Colon.
Love it. Great.
Yeah, that's a fun way of looking at things.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
I think that's what got my attention. I'm like, oh, this girl is fun.
That and you drinking out of a mug with a poop emoji.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes.
It's good to put a human face to a condition, because then it just makes it feel more easier to handle, I
mm-hmm,
guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just
a
condition.
Thank
it's
you.
Yes, yes. I appreciate
it. And you do
that.
A lovely job at that. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show this morning. We really appreciate your time. And this has been very, very insightful, not only to us, but I'm sure it's going to be insightful for all our listeners as well.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure, and I've really enjoyed speaking with you about PSD.
Us thank too, you. Yes. If any of our listeners have questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice or diagnosis or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard in this podcast.
Whew! Till next week.